Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and we are here for a very, very, very special call and presentation by Donica Suska, and it's all about being chem conscious and detoxifying your life of those chemicals that sneak in unbeknownst to you. And they don't sneak in unbeknownst to Donna, because Donna has dedicated the last 15 years of her life to taking the toxins out. She's a chemical engineer. She runs a consulting company. And what she does for a living is she goes into these big chemical plants and teaches them how to be safe with the chemicals. So what she's put together for us is nothing short of amazing. She shared it with me last night. I'm thrilled with what she's put together. It's a really cool spreadsheet with all kinds of chemicals and where they're hidden and where they're lurking and what you can do to protect yourself from them. So I'm just going to be in the background here. I'll interject where needed. I just want to introduce you to my dear friend and amazing, amazing chemical engineer and detoxify your life person, Donica Suska. So thank you, Donna.
Well, thank you, Dr. Rita Marie. And hello, everyone. It's such a pleasure to be here tonight. The purpose of this call is to take you through what I'm so excited, because this is my first product. So before I start walking you through the product, because I think it does need a little bit of explanation, I do want to get on the same page and let everyone know exactly why I'm doing this and how I got to where I am today. If you've heard me speak, you've probably heard this story before, but bear with me, because just in case someone hasn't, I was a chemical engineer. I've been one for 33 years now, and when I graduated from college, I was just like any other chemical engineer. I thought it was really cool to be in chemical plants, and I thought I was doing the world some good. I thought I was really making a difference by helping to make chemicals and to design chemical processes so that we can make more chemicals. And we had the idea that chemicals were, like everything in life, was centered around chemicals. And that is true to a certain extent. Like, all of our body processes can be chemically explained. But we had this idea that the more chemicals we made, the better. It was years before I actually woke up and realized what actually is happening in this world. I realized it actually with my son. He was young. He was about 4 years old, and we were getting ready to take him to daycare one morning, and I was putting sunscreen on him, and he started crying because it was burning his knees. His knees were all skinned up, and so he said, "Mom, please stop putting these on my legs." So I looked at the ingredients thinking, oh, there must be alcohol in here or something. I want to check it. And when I looked, I thought, oh, my gosh, the things that are in here, they're all these hazardous chemicals that I have been spending my time in the chemical plant protecting workers from. So in other words, you know, while we were in the plant making these chemicals, we also have lots of rules and regulations and laws that made us be very careful and prevent the workers from being exposed to these chemicals while they were making them. Yeah, so I made that discovery, and what happened was I started to read every label I could get my hands on, and it started to paint a huge picture for me, in that I realized that these chemicals were in everything. And so even though in the plants we were taught that a little bit won't hurt you, And but we still had laws and regulations that required us to control these chemicals to the parts per billion range. And so if we were making sure that a worker didn't receive any more than like a part per billion or maybe 10 parts per billion, if we were making sure that workers didn't get that kind of exposure, then how come we were allowed to put these chemicals in sunscreens and other products? And so then what I realized also is that when we get a little bit in our sunscreen, and even if that little bit doesn't hurt us, we also get a little bit in our shampoo and a little bit more in our lotion. And then we sometimes get the same products that are in our personal care products. We get the same chemicals in our food and sometimes in our drinking water. And so if you go throughout the day and you get a little bit here and a little bit there, by the time you get to the end of your day, you've been exposed to a lot of hazardous chemicals. And these chemicals are neurotoxins, they're hormone disruptors. Some of them are outright carcinogenic. Some of them have been proven to be carcinogenic, and yet we are allowed to have a tiny bit in products. And so that's what started me on my quest. And so I started with myself. So my son, that was when he was about four, and he's 19 now. So it's been a while. And I started with myself because I just wanted to protect myself and my family as best I could. I realized at the time, although I didn't think it, but eventually I realized that I had become seriously toxic. And I knew that it wasn't from my exposures in the chemical plant because I had documented proof that we were keeping the exposures really low in the chemical plant. But yet I was really toxic. And it turns out that I was getting just as much as we were keeping the workers from, I was getting it in my food and my personal products. And so I went on this quest to first detoxify my own life and detoxify my home and get the chemicals out of my children's food and their drinking water and their air. And then I met Dr. Rita Marie, and she helped me get the chemicals out of my body. Because what the most important thing is that once I decided to get the chemicals out of my life, that doesn't necessarily mean that they automatically come out of my body. So I get them out of my life first, then I consult with Dr. Rita Marie, then I get them out of my body, and thank you, she saved my life, and now I'm 50 pounds lighter, and I feel great, and now I'm out sharing my message with the world. The other reason that it took me so long to get this out into the world is that I just didn't really think that anyone cared to hear it. I often ran into people, and when I would tell them, you know, I will eat that because that's bad for you, I would get a lot of people with the response of, don't tell me. I don't want to know. What I don't know won't hurt me. I don't want to know what's in here. Just don't ruin this for me. Don't ruin this pizza for me. Okay? And so for several years, even though I had done all this research myself and got these chemicals out of my life, I still didn't feel like anyone really cared to hear. And I have seen such a change in the last few years. And it's not because I'm hanging around with a different group of people. It's just that more people are becoming aware, and more people are speaking up. And I think more people are realizing that the solution to this problem is that we all have to make the right demands. We all have to be aware of what's in the products and be conscious of what we are choosing. And the way we started this problem in the first place is because we all wanted food that would last more than a couple of days in our house. We don't have to go shopping every day. So we wanted things that would make our hair shiny and fluffy, and we wanted things that, you know, we wanted makeup, and we wanted, you know, we wanted to be tan. We wanted to prevent sun exposure because we thought that was going to give us cancer. And what we didn't do, and we didn't know it, but what we didn't do is we didn't say, we want these things, and we also want them to be safe. So yes, we want to preserve our food, but we don't really want to use DHT and other awful preservatives. We want to try to preserve our food more naturally. And so now what I'm seeing is more people want to hear about it, and even better, a lot of manufacturers are starting to come out with safer products. And the only way that this is going to turn around is if we all keep asking for those safer products and start reading our labels and being aware of what's in our products. So that is when someone said, Donna, you ought to write this all down. Because I keep speaking to people, and I go and I present these speeches, and then I get so many wonderful comments and emails, and all of you out there who have been emailing me, thank you so much, because it really, really is encouraging. And so I did. I wrote it all down, and I decided to share it with everyone. And so the way I did it, I want to explain this too, because this product might seem a little bit intimidating at first, but the way I did this is I took exactly what we do in industry, and I put it into, I think it's community terms is the best way to put it. I took exactly what we do, and I still do this. In fact, right before the phone call, I just came back from a trip where I spent the entire week doing exactly what I'm going to teach you tonight in a large chemical plant and helping these people to reduce their risk in the plant. So it's nothing new that I'm teaching you. It's just a little bit different spin on the way we do it in the plant. This, of course, is the first never-before-released version of my product. Oh, yes, it is DrRitaMarie.com/go/detoxify-your-life. If you don't have my product, you can either go and download that now, or you can just kind of watch this presentation and get a feel for what's there, and then you can go download it later and go through what I'm going to teach you. So based on what I just talked to you about, the main point that I really want to get across today is that it is not hard to get the chemicals out of your life, okay? I live in a normal house. You know, I live a very normal life. I do very similar things to everybody else. Yes, some people, especially my kids, think I'm weird, but for the most part, I lead a normal life, but it is chemical-free. So you don't have to go crazy. You don't have to go live in a cave in the wilderness and eat wild berries in order to avoid the chemicals. We just have to use some common sense and know where they are. And the way we do that is we look at what I like to call risk. And risk is a two-part word, okay? It has two things. It is consequences, and it is likelihood, okay? So the way to understand that the best is if I tell you that air travel is very hazardous and risky, most people would believe me, and most people would think that air travel is more risky than car travel. But it turns out that because even though the consequences of flying are very bad, you know, when a plane crashes, we all hear about it, okay, it's terrible, we don't hear about every car crash. In some cases, there are so many car crashes that, you know, we couldn't possibly hear about all of them, okay? But it actually turns out that it is more risky to drive your car than it is to fly in an airplane for several reasons. Even though the consequences are not as great when you crash your car, okay? You could survive crashing a car. It's much less likely that you would survive crashing an airplane. However, we fly a whole lot less than we drive, okay? And so the frequency is what matters, okay? Even though the consequences are really bad if you crash your plane, it's so much less likely that you will crash your plane than crash your car. It makes car travel more risky. So hopefully that little introduction, and once I show you my risk matrix, it will all make sense. So what I'm going to do is bring that up, okay? So this is my risk matrix. I'm going to make it a little bit bigger now just so everyone can see it. And basically what we do is when we're looking at a behavior, okay, let's just take, drinking chlorinated water. Let's look at that behavior. And let's say, okay, we have to first define what are the consequences of drinking public water or chlorinated water. And then what is the likelihood, okay, of drinking chlorinated water? So let's look at the consequences first, okay? Chlorine, although chlorine itself is not a carcinogen, it has been linked to thyroid cancer, and it has also been linked to other forms of cancer because chlorine reacts with organics in the body or in the water or wherever it is, anywhere it can get organics, and it forms trihalomethane, THM, which are carcinogenic, okay? So they've been proven to be carcinogenic. So we know that if you look at this risk matrix, we know that chlorine fits into category one. Chlorine is fatal in high doses, we all know that, but it's also known or suspected to cause cancer. Okay, so I would give that a one. Now, if I drink public water and I drink it every day, then my likelihood of drinking chlorinated water is a one. I do this one or more times per day. So I go down to my little risk matrix there it's on the bottom on the left. And I give it a 1 for consequence and a 1 for likelihood, and that means I have an A. And so over on the right, under suggested actions, you see that an A is unacceptable. that's something that you have to take action immediately to find an alternative. Okay, so let's take another example. Okay, let's take you have a child who's eating dirt. Okay, maybe they like to go outside and you know, put their fingers in their mouth. Okay, so you know that in your heart that's probably not a good thing, but we know dirt has not been proven to be a carcinogen. Okay, dirt doesn't really have any major immediate effect on us. It does. It's not a teratogen. It's not a mutagen. It's not a hormone disruptor. It's just dirt. Okay, and so that would be a four. Okay, that's irritating. You know, it might make the child sick for a while, but you know, there's no significant damage or harm. Okay, and maybe the child does this once a day. Maybe the child does this one to three times a month. Okay, but let's just for this example assume that the child does this one to three times a year. So what we have here is a four and a three. Okay, now I don't know if you can see my cursor here, but I'm pointing over here on the consequence level, and I have a four. And if I go down there to a level three, I get a D. Okay, a D is acceptable. And so basically no action is necessary unless you have noticeable symptoms. You know, if you notice that the child gets sick every time he or she eats dirt, oops, I don't need to update my virus protection at the moment. Sorry about that. Unless the child gets sick, it's probably not something you should focus on, especially if you're drinking chlorinated water and you're worrying about the child eating dirt. I think it's more important to focus on the chlorinated water. Okay, so those are two examples, kind of extreme, and I was trying to get an example on different ends of the spectrum so you can see how this works. So let me go through these levels with you. I give something a one if it's toxic to the point where it's fatal in high doses. Okay, I also give it a one if it is known or suspected to cause cancer. And I also give it a one if we're talking about radiation, because that is, of course, known or suspected to cause cancer. Okay, in the two category, I talk about things that give irreversible damage. Okay, so something is a mutagen, that means that it affects your genes. A teratogen, which is something that would affect an unborn fetus. A neurotoxin, which means it affects your brain cells. Or a hormone disruptor, which that's a large category, but any of us who've been working with Dr. Rita Marie are starting to really understand our hormones and really understand how disrupting that beautiful balance that we're supposed to have with our hormones is very serious. And some people, I'm sure some of you might want to put that one up in the number one category. Okay? And then I also added that if something causes noticeable symptoms to you, again, because this is all about you, and that's another major point with this product, is that it doesn't matter what someone else is doing. What matters is what affects you, okay? So you have to look at your life and determine what your risk is, and if something causes noticeable symptoms every time you're near it, you should stop using it, okay? So I put that up into two. Now, number three, I talk about acute or immediate effects, such as something's corrosive, it burns your skin, or it's flammable, it can burst into flames, or it's an allergen, it irritates you, or dust is irritating if there's too much of it. Mold is another one that's irritating, but again, if mold gives you serious symptoms, I would put that in a higher consequence category than just a three. Okay, and then four is things that are just irritating and not really significant damage or harm. Okay, so then we move over to likelihood, and we say, okay, how often do I engage in this behavior? You know, if I have a bottle of shampoo that contains some weird chemical that has been shown to cause cancer, and I use it, I shampoo with that maybe twice a day, well, that's, you know, you've got some serious likelihood of getting cancer if you're using this cancer-causing product more than once a day, okay? But if you use it, either never use it, or maybe you only use the shampoo when you travel and you're in the hotel and you know, you ran out of your own shampoo, and that might be like, you know, once in 10 years or something, then you don't have to worry about that, because these chemicals in these small quantities really won't hurt you if you're doing it once every 10 years. Okay? So if you go down here to the suggested action, what we're going to do is we're going to go through this checklist, and you're going to get letters corresponding to your level of risk for each of the questions that I ask in the checklist. So you're going to get A's, you're going to get B's and C's and D's. And then what you're going to do is you're going to start addressing the A's, because that's what you're doing. When you're addressing the A's, you are addressing the highest risks in your life. Okay? And then you're going to go and address the B's, which are undesirable, which means you should take action very soon, okay, as opposed to immediately. Then we're going to look at the C's. Now, C's are conditionally acceptable. In other words, you need to evaluate ways to find an alternative. You might want to reduce your exposure, use protective measures, and that's another big thing. Sometimes, like, all right, I use ammonia to clean the pans in my oven. Now, ammonia is an acutely hazardous chemical, and you don't want to be exposed to too much of it. But I don't do it very often. Maybe once a year I take the racks out of my oven, and I put them in a big trash bag, and I put some household ammonia in there, and I close up the trash bag, and I let them soak overnight. And then when I get up in the morning, I rinse them off with a hose, and it's a miracle. It takes everything off. Now, you know, people would argue that ammonia is hazardous, and I shouldn't be using that because I say I have all the chemicals out of my life, you know, and then I go and do that. But see, what I'm doing there is I'm looking at the fact that, you know, I would put ammonia in a 3 category for consequence. And since I do that maybe once a year, I would put that also in a 3 category, and that gives me a C. It gives me a conditionally acceptable. And then what it says there is you might want to use protective measures during your infrequent exposures. So when I do that, I do it outside. I put the ammonia in the trash bag outside, and I put the racks in there, and then I seal it all up, and then I'm not exposed. If I'm exposed to chlorine, I'm lucky if I even smell it, let alone actually get an exposure. So I'm protecting myself and keeping it away from my breathing zone. You know, I wear gloves when I do it. I seal up the bag. So really, I'm taking actions to minimize my infrequent exposure. Okay, and then D, of course, is acceptable, and you really don't have to take any action unless you have noticeable symptoms, you know, or you really believe that this is something that you want out of your life, or you've gotten all the other chemicals out of your life, and now you're on a roll, and you want to keep doing it. Okay, so anyway, that is my risk matrix. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to do a split screen here, and I'm going to pull up my product so that we can start going through the checklist. So hopefully you recognize this product because you've seen it as recently as today. And I just want to go over this one last part here where I say, you know, and trust me, if, like, I'm trying to go through this slowly and I'm assuming that maybe you haven't read it, but don't worry if you haven't read it, because this will make sense to you. And you will understand it. And then when you go back and read the product, the beginning chapters are really just setting up and explaining why this works and what we're doing. And so you didn't really miss anything if you haven't read it. Okay, but I do want to emphasize that there are no wrong answers. Like I said, this is all about you. So if, you know, you may have an answer that, you know, if you're sitting next to somebody and they're filling out this checklist, no one's going to have you know, no two people are going to have the same exact answers on the checklist. I want you to use this on your family members, and I want you to, you know, have them go through it and recognize where they may be having different exposures than you, or maybe they're having different symptoms, and then you can, you know, certainly work on their exposures and their risk as well. Okay? The other thing I want to mention before we get into my checklist is that I have filled out the consequence levels for you. That doesn't mean that you're stuck with them, okay, because you can take this and you can change it. You can cross out what consequence level I have put and put what you think is a better one that describes your situation. Because mine, what I've tried to do is I have looked at the worst case analysis. So if I have found any link to cancer, I've given it a 1, okay? If I have, you know, if I have reason to believe that something is a hormone disruptor, I will give it a 2. But maybe, you know, if you go out and do your research, you may not agree with me, and that's okay, because this is identifying your specific risk. Okay, so this is what my checklist looks like, and this checklist is designed for you to go through step by step and do what I did in my life, okay? But I didn't do it as organized as this. In fact, I didn't do it anywhere near as organized as this. And what I did is I kind of went crazy and decided that I was going to remove all the chemicals from my life really fast, and that I was going to do everything all at once. What happened was I got a little overwhelmed. I got to a point where there were days where I just didn't know what I could do. I knew what I couldn't have, but I wasn't really clear on what I could have, and that was a bit of a stressor. And I got to say, you know, I came out of it okay, but I don't recommend that approach. I recommend a step-by-step, let's work on this one first, let's work on this one second, until we get to the point where we're comfortable with our risk. Okay, so I started with air, because air, it's not the easiest one to do, okay? Products would be the easiest thing to do, because you just look up the ingredients and research them and make a decision. But things in your house are not only more difficult to understand, but they're even they're also expensive. Some of the fixes are expensive, and so that's why I wanted to go through this one first. Because if you identify the high risk areas, you can start to budget in some of the things that you want to do, and you can start to take some early measures that that may not be as expensive, like opening windows. Okay, so the first thing I want to talk about is combustion products. Okay, combustion products. If you've heard me speak before, I know you've heard me say that the reason I don't like things like candles, basically candles, I don't like them because they are an open flame and they create smoke and they create combustion products. And even though, you know, we're told that, you know, when you burn something organic, you get carbon dioxide and water. Right? Well, that's in a perfect world. You get carbon dioxide in water, and in that case, not a big problem, you know, because water's not hazardous, and carbon dioxide, especially if you have enough, there's plenty of carbon dioxide in the air anyway, so you shouldn't be so concerned. But that's not the only thing you get, because nothing ever burns complete. So you get smoke and other combustion products, sulfur dioxide and nitrogen, oxides of nitrogen, and other things that are dangerous. So when we heat our home with natural gas, propane, and oil, these are hydrocarbons. And when we have a forced air heating system in our home, we are creating these hydrocarbons and we're blowing them around our house. And if we have an energy-efficient house, we are buttoning it up really tight and insulating everything and keeping all these things in the house. And so we end up with a buildup inside of our home. So combustion products, I believe, are one of the easiest things to get rid of. So my first question is, do you live or work in a building that has a forced air heating system that is fueled with natural gas, propane, or oil? And you do not have a fresh air, HEPA filter ventilation system. Okay, so if that's the case, I've already ranked that as a 3. Okay, that's not, if you look over on my risk matrix, that's acute, immediate effects, but not, to my knowledge, anything that's going to give you cancer or be fatal in high doses. Okay, so, I mean, and we'll get to carbon monoxide, so you could argue with me on that one, but I'm trying to separate these things out. Okay, so I gave that a 3, and then if you do have this kind of a system and it's in your home and you're in your home every day, then you would, of course, give that a 1. You know, if you have it only at your vacation home, then you would give that the appropriate frequency, okay? So let's assume that you have given it a 1 because you have that, right? So you would put a 1 in that box. Then we would go over here to our risk matrix, and we say, okay, we gave it a 3 and a 1. So that is a B. Okay, a B is undesirable, take action soon. Okay, so let's put it here and give it a B. So then over here on the right-hand column, I give suggestions of what to do. So your immediate solution would be to open windows often. Okay, even if it's wintertime, even if it's summertime, whatever the weather out there, try to get ventilation. Try to get your windows open and get the fresh air circulating in your house. Turn on ceiling fans, turn on fans, get things moving, and that will help to get rid of and ventilate any combustion products. And then, you know, a long-term solution is to install, and I've got this recommended in several places here, install what I call a fresh air HEPA filtering ventilation system. Now, what is that? HEPA, H-E-P-A, stands for High Efficiency Particulate Air. Okay, that's not necessary that you remember that, because any heating and ventilation, an air conditioning company would definitely know what HEPA means. But you can buy a filter, a whole house filtration system, ventilation system, that actually brings in fresh air, filters it through this high-efficiency particulate air filter, and brings it into your home, and also exhausts the other air out of your house. People who have installed these systems they cannot stop talking about how much better they feel. People get rid of asthma conditions, they get rid of allergy conditions, they just have more energy, they get rid of migraines and headaches and all kinds of symptoms, and it's because they're living in tight, buttoned-up houses that are energy efficient, but they're not healthy anymore. So if you have this situation or a bunch of other ones that I'm going to talk about, it's very, very important to at least consider some kind of a ventilation system in your house. And if you have to, just turn on your house fan and let that run for a while. That's not the best way, because it's not necessarily pulling fresh air in, and it's not filtering through a HEPA filter, but at least it's getting things moving, and that's important. Okay, so carbon monoxide. So do you live or work in a building, again, with a forced air heating system fueled with natural gas, propane, or oil, and you don't have a carbon monoxide alarm? Okay, carbon monoxide is one of the products of combustion. It's a product of incomplete combustion, but you very rarely have complete combustion. If there's a leak in the flue, and there's definitely carbon monoxide in the flue, and then that's going to get into your house. And it's very, very easy and inexpensive to go buy a carbon monoxide alarm. And I will tell you that I have saved a life by purchasing this. And it's kind of a funny story. One year we bought a carbon monoxide monitor for my husband's parents. And you know how when you give somebody a present that they're not really sure if they like it or not? And so they unwrapped this present, and here was this carbon monoxide alarm, and they really honestly didn't know what it was. But they were very gracious. They said, thank you so much for this thing that you gave us. But they did install it because they didn't want us to think, you know, feel bad that they didn't like our present. So they did install it in their house. And it was a little while later, I don't know, a few years, and that thing alarmed in the middle of the night and really scared them, of course, because, you know, they had forgotten about it and weren't expecting it. But it did go into alarm. So they called the gas company. And when the gas company arrived, there was a leak, and the person that was servicing their heater said to them that actually they were so lucky that they had that alarm, because if they didn't have it, they wouldn't have been alive in the morning. Wow. Okay, so that, you know, just hearing that and just knowing that we were able to do that, you know, even for one person is really heartwarming, and I need to share that with everybody. I have a carbon monoxide alarm in my house, and again, they're so easy to get. You can go to the Home Depot and buy a First Alert carbon monoxide alarm and install it in your house in minutes.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Yes.
Is it just for the forced heating? Like, we don't have forced heating in our house, but we have a propane heater or a gas heater for our hot water, and we also have it for our stove.
Well, it's actually if you have forced air, that's how it's going to get blown around your house. But if you, because, you know, natural gas and propane, like, they odorize the natural gas. So if there's an actual natural gas leak or a propane leak from one of those things, they're odorized so you can smell them. And that's the safety feature. nature, because the carbon monoxide alarm won't pick that up, won't pick up a gas leak. There are alarms that you can get. They call them LEL detectors. We use them in the plants, but I actually honestly don't know if there is one available for a home, because that's why they do that. They odorize the natural gas.
Got it.
So no, carbon monoxide alarm won't pick that up.
But we don't need it, what you're saying, because we don't have the forced
air. Right.
We have an electric heating. Okay, got it.
Right. But it's a matter of when you have a leak in the flue, which is like they've already burnt the fuel and it's going out the flue, and you had a leak there, and the forced air system was circulated through your house.
Got it.
Okay, so now we get to carbon monoxide and combustion products. So this is open flame. Okay, open flame heaters like kerosene heaters and propane heaters that are open, diesel fuel heaters, space heaters that are indoors. This does not mean anything that's sent to the outside. These are heaters that you bring in and burn. You're getting some serious amounts of combustion products and carbon monoxide. And so my suggestions there are to look for alternative heating appliances that do not have open flames and are vented to the outside. I say also open windows, install, again, a fresh air, have a filtering system, which would help, but really, number one is my preferred method. Just don't use open flame heaters indoors. It's just not healthy. Okay? And again, you can install a carbon monoxide alarm for that. Okay. So moving on, here's another one, carbon monoxide and sulfur. This is rare, but I wanted to bring it up because there are people who work in places where there's vehicle and generator exhaust gases. And again, exhaust gases, you know, just like what comes out of your car, they're hazardous. And so if you are one of those people that do work in that type of environment, you know, you would end up having like a one, you know, because you do this one or more times a day, that may be a high risk for you. And so I wanted to make sure I mention it and give some, some suggestions. And this one is one of the few places where I've said you might want to consider respiratory protection, because exhaust gases are extremely hazardous. And if you can get a respirator and wear it, that's better than working in that every day. Okay, dust. I wanted to bring up dust because, you know, some people are allergic to dust and they know it, and so they automatically want to stay away from dust. But dust is basically hazardous to everyone when the environment is overly dusty, okay? And the rule of thumb is if you can see the dust in the air and you are in an environment that is too dusty, and dust is considered hazardous, at least in the workplace, we have to keep dust below the level where it would be visible. And we have ways to measure dust in the air and everything, but using that rule of thumb is the best thing for now. So if you live or work in a dusty environment, do you work somewhere where you're sanding wood all day or, sandblasting or any number of things that you do, or if you have a hobby that's very dusty, if you work in the basement and you're like a woodworker and you have lots of dust, you need to get some kind of a dust collection system. You need to stop breathing dust in on a regular basis, because it is harmful even if you're not allergic. It's just breathing in solid particles into your lungs, and it's going to cause disease and illness if you don't control it. So again, this is another place where I recommend respiratory protection, and I also recommend local ventilation. That means like a dust collector or something that is going to remove the dust from your breathing zone. Okay, and that's another really important point to make too, that I'm trying to take out of the industrial world and bring into the community, is the concept of what do we do first? Like if you've got a lot of different solutions, what is the best solution? And what we always consider with personal protective equipment, like PPE, which means like respirators and gloves and chemical resistant suits and all these things that we could put on our bodies to protect us from these exposures, we always say that that's a last resort. We want to try to eliminate the hazard first. Then we want to try to control the hazard. So by eliminating it, it's just get rid of the dusty, whatever is causing the dust. By controlling the hazard, we're ventilating. We're getting it out of our breathing zone. And then, as a last resort, if it's too much dust and we're still being exposed, then we go with respiratory protection. So that's always the last thing we choose. Okay, so I didn't say this would be complete with a study of air unless we started talking about pollen. So pollen is an allergen. That's why I ranked it a 3. But this question is, do you work outside exposed to pollen? I originally had this question and said, do you work outside in the spring exposed to pollen? But then I realized that there are some people, like Dr. Rita Marie, who live in summer all the time where you are. So I didn't qualify that one, and I just left it to you guys. So if you do work outside exposed to pollen, I would, you know, if it's only if you have seasons, then I would pick a likelihood that matches the number of seasons in it, wherever you live. And I would put that here. So in my case, you know, I live in Pennsylvania. So, you know, our pollen season is maybe, I'm going to say like 4 months out of the year, maybe 5. And so, I'm going to give that a 3 in our case. So if it was doing it for me, I would be a 3 and a 3 and a C. Okay. And so if I were symptomatic, I would consider respiratory protection. So some of my family members do wear a mask, like a dust mask, outside. Dust masks do filter out pollen because pollen is a form of dust. And so anyone that is symptomatic, if you're cutting the grass and you're outside with pollen, I would wear a dust mask. I think that would definitely be the best way to support your immune system and not antagonize it. Okay, I would also implement other strategies to support my immune system, such as taking antioxidants and, doing green cleanses and just doing things to support your body's immune system. And then what else I would do, if I had to work outside all day in pollen and I was having symptoms or I was trying to prevent symptoms, is I would do everything I could to reduce my exposures when I'm not working. Okay, and that's true of any of these things. If we're talking about these things, and the answer to these questions is yes when you're at work and no when you're at home, then what I would do is I would try to, of course, reduce the exposures at work, but then I would also try to reduce my exposures when I got home. So I would put in good ventilation in my home, and I would make sure that I wasn't pulling more pollen into my house while I was sleeping.
I love this matrix thing. It's just so clear. It makes it so clear.
Thank you. It does make it so easy. And that's like really this week I spent 8 hours a day, 3 days in a row, going through every single part of a particular chemical plant and asking these questions and ranking every one of the scenarios, we call them, that we came up with. So that's exactly what I'm doing here with you, and it works. It makes it so clear. You break it down into these little parts. Like I'm not saying, you know, I'm not trying to analyze an entire heating system in one place. I'm breaking it down into the different hazards and looking at each one. And once you do that, when you break it down, it's so easy. Mm-hmm. Okay, so moving on, because radon is a really important one. If you live in an area that's designated as a high radon area and you don't have a radon abatement system in your house, then what you need to do is check. So I've given you the link there. You could go to the EPA website if you're in the United States. And I realize that there are people who are not in the United States, and that is on my list of things to do to improve this product, is to look up if you live in other countries, if there is a way that you can check for radon. But I know that the radon map in the United States is very accurate, and people who live in these high radon areas should definitely have a radon test done. Now, you can do that yourself. You can, there's a space right there on that EPA website where you can request a free radon kit, and they'll send it right to your house, and you do the test, and it has instructions and everything. And then, of course, you have to send it out for analysis, and you have to pay for that. But it's not very expensive, and it's definitely worth it because radon, I've given that a 1 because radon is a significant cause of lung cancer and definitely a lot of other lung diseases. And it, we're just starting to realize what a serious problem it is. Okay, so you test the air in your home. Go there and see if you're in a high radon area, and then test the air in your home. And then if your results are high, you need to look into radon abatement systems, which are not cheap, but they're definitely worth it. And then, of course, when you have the radon abatement system, and definitely before that, you need to do some serious ventilation and keep your, you know, open your windows often and be outside more often. And you know, especially don't close yourself up doing a hobby in the basement, because that's where the radon comes into your house. It seeps in through your basement walls and your basement floor from the ground. Okay, so moving on from radon, then, we have volatile organic compounds, VOCs. And I know, you know, most people have heard of VOCs. You've heard of things like low VOC paint. You know, if you're painting the walls in your house, paint used to be full of solvents. And that's what a VOC is. It's something that is very volatile. It has a strong odor. It evaporates readily. That's what the word volatile means. It evaporates easily in air. And so one thing that everybody would be familiar with that is a VOC is nail polish remover. That's a solvent. It's mostly acetone, and it evaporates rapidly. You know that if you keep a bottle of nail polish remover around for a really long time, especially now that they put them in plastic bottles, it loses its potency because it really is evaporating rapidly into the air every time you open it, and now seeping through its plastic bottle. So anyway, VOCs are a problem because they are neurotoxic. And depending on which solvents are in various things, they definitely affect brain cells. Some of them are hormone disruptors. Some of them are considered to be mutagens and teratogens. Mutagens, again, affect your genes, and teratogens affect an unborn fetus. Okay? So one of the most common sources of VOCs is plug-in scented oil air fresheners. Those are, that's one that I fell for. I have always loved when my house smelled nice. I always thought it should smell nice, and I always made all kinds of effort to keep potpourri and other scented things. But then I learned what's actually in fragrance, and actually I didn't learn what's in fragrance. I learned that nobody knows what's in some fragrances because they're all protected by copyright and trade secret laws. And so, you know, even if you look up the ingredients of something, all you're going to see is the word fragrance. And you have to learn to associate that the word fragrance or scent definitely means that it has VOCs in them, volatile organic compounds. So if you use plug-in scented oil air fresheners and you use them every day in your house, you'd have to give that a 1. And so a 2 and a 1 is going to be an A, and that means we need to address that and get rid of those scented air fresheners. Now, there's a lot of things you can use, okay? You can, the first thing I say is get them out of the house. Don't use them. Number 2, I say if you really, really want to have your house to smell nice, you can diffuse essential oils. And I have a link here that you could go to if you are interested in purchasing essential oils. Okay, another source of VOCs, I don't know about you, I have never had my nails done. I've never, ever felt the need to. I used to do my own nails when I was really young, like in high school. But I always get headaches from nail polish, headaches from nail polish remover. I don't feel well when I go to, like, the Staples Print and Copy Center. If I spend a lot of time in somebody's copy room, you know, at my clients or whatever, the solvents apparently give me instant headaches, and maybe that's good. That's my warning system. But if you work in any of these environments where, you know, you're in a nail salon, I can't walk past the door of a nail salon because I can't take the smell. If you work in a print and copy center or the, you know, your office is located right next to the Xerox room, you know, if you're a painter, if you're, you know, you work for a company that makes paint, you work somewhere where they're doing renovations in the building, I can go on and on with possible places where these could be. But if you are exposed to these types of solvents every every day, then this is a concern for you. You're going to have to give this a 1, and that's going to be an A. You know, maybe you get your nails done, you know, once every 10 years, you know, like when you go to a family wedding or something, I don't know. In that case, you would probably give that a 4, right? A 2 and a 4 is a C, which is conditionally acceptable. In other words, you know, maybe you want to wear a respirator or something when you're painting your nails, or, you know, maybe you want to use, you know, some kind of stick-on nail things or whatever, although you have to be careful because you don't know what's in the glue and stuff for that. But so this one, I'm going to go with a 2 and a 4, because in my case, if I was doing this for me, mine would be a never, so that would be a 4, and a 2 and a 4 would give me a C. Okay, so again, what do? You open windows often, you try to get some kind of a filtering ventilation system, but I realize that if you work in an environment like this, you may not have that option. And, you know, although employers are required to address exposure, so maybe this is a good time to say that if there's anybody listening here who feels that they are working somewhere in an environment where they are exposed to something, it's not only important, I think it's your responsibility to bring it up and to try to get the building owner, the company owner, your boss, manager, whatever, somebody to be interested in. Because if you're being exposed, I'm sure there's a lot of other people being exposed also. And so, again, I don't think it's, you know, being a pain in the butt. I don't think it's making waves. I think it's something that it's your responsibility to bring it to the attention of whoever can get something done about it. And in the meantime, of course, open the windows. Okay. Another source of VOCs is heavy-duty cleaning products. Okay, paint thinners and degreasers. You know, some people are just real cleaning fanatics. And so if you are using something that, you know, if you have a hobby and you have to soak your brushes in paint thinner every night before you know, paint brushes, or if you just really like to clean and you go to the Home Depot and you buy these industrial strength cleaners, or, you know, anything that is labeled heavy duty or industrial strength, it does definitely contain lots of solvents, which are volatile organic compounds, which again are neurotoxins and other issues. So that's also ranked at 2. And my suggestions for that is, number 1, to consider alternative cleaning products, of course. Number 2 is always use them in adequate ventilation. Okay, so, you know, if you're soaking brushes in paint thinner, do it outside. Put the paint thinner in a container and stick it outside and put the brush in there. Don't leave them soaking in your basement while you go to sleep at night. You know, open windows often. If this is a hobby of yours, you do this all the time, you know, you rank high on this one, then, you know, consider installing, again, some kind of a ventilation system to get these out of your hobby room or wherever it is that you do this. Consider wearing respiratory protection when you're using them. And when I say respiratory protection, you know, I mentioned earlier that dust masks are good for pollen. Dust masks are good for dusty environments. But when we're talking about solvents, you need a real respirator, a respirator that has cartridges that are designed to remove vapors like, you know, toluene and benzene and xylene and, you know, there's a whole bunch of them that I could name, but really, you know, even the acetones and the things like that, you cannot wear a dust mask. You will still be able to smell it. You will still be able to be exposed. And even worse, because dust masks will collect these vapors, and then the dust mask is contaminated, and every time you wear it, you're going to get more exposure. So if you are considering respiratory protection, you know, consult an expert. You know, send me an email, whatever, and I'll tell you what to get, because it's not just that one. You know, when you're protecting yourself against solvent vapors, that's not something you can go to the Home Depot and buy. That's something you have to, you know, get the right kind or you won't be protected. Okay, and then, of course, wear gloves when you're contacting any heavy-duty cleaners or any types of solvents, because, as I always say, don't put anything on your skin that you would not be willing to eat. Okay, so touching it with your hands is just as bad as breathing it in. It's just as bad as putting it in your mouth. So whenever you, if you must use these things, like if you're going to give this one a 4, that you do it, you know, once every 10 years or so, just make sure that you protect yourself and wear some gloves while you're doing it. Okay, another one, volatile organic compounds, is scented candles. And I already talked about how smoke is, you know, toxic because of the particles that are in there. It doesn't matter what you're burning. If it's smoke, it's toxic. But then when you mix scented candles, you're burning, you got the toxic smoke, and you also have these VOCs, and then you don't know what kind of combustion products you're going to get from these VOCs. So this one I toyed with between a 2 and a 1, and I went with a 2, and then I made the same suggestions as I did for scented air fresheners. Okay? Now, what I'm trying to do here, I know that I don't want to run over time too much, so I'm looking at watching the time, and I am also keeping in mind that, I knew when I started here that we were not going to be able to finish this entire checklist, but I think what I'm trying to do here is go over these ones that might be need a little bit more explanation, and also to try and get you somewhat maybe through the air section at least. So while I was on the subject of smoke, I, of course, needed to mention cigarettes. Even if it's secondhand smoke, cigarettes, cigars, and pipes, we've all been told a million times how bad that is for us, but some people still like to smoke. And I just thought it was necessary to mention that secondhand smoke is just as bad, if not worse. By secondhand, I mean you're not the person smoking, but you're around someone who is. So I think it's really, really important to avoid secondhand cigarette smoke as much as possible. So, again, you know, if you work somewhere where they have, you know, a smoking section right outside the door and you have to walk through it every day, I think that's bad. I would do anything to avoid walking through a cloud of cigarette smoke. Okay, another place where you get smoke is from cooking, space heaters, candles, oil lamps, incense, anything that is on fire. There shouldn't be anything on fire in your house. So, again, my suggestion is eliminate the source of smoke, open the windows often. If you must keep it in your house, then you need to go and get a good filtering and ventilation system. Okay, we wouldn't be complete if we didn't mention fire retardant chemicals. If you have recently, let's say in the past 3 years, purchased new furniture, a new car, new carpet, if the answer is yes, you need to enter a 1 for likelihood because you are being exposed every day to fire retardant chemicals. It's a fact of life, and I don't know if we're going to change that anytime soon because, at least in this country, I know that you cannot buy furniture, carpet, or new cars that do not have fire retardant chemicals in them. These are serious hormone disruptors. In fact, that plant that I worked at for Monsanto years ago, back when I started, I was making a chemical called tetrachlorophthalic anhydride, which is a phthalate, which is a serious hormone disruptor, and it was a fire retardant for vinyl car seats. So anyway, I gave that a 2. I toyed with making it a 1, but it really is a hormone disruptor, and so that's where it belongs. But really, you need to open your windows often, definitely ventilate your house if you have new furniture, at least for the first 3 years once you've purchased it. Okay? Makes a case for Craigslist when you think about it, you know, because if you buy furniture secondhand, all the fire retardant chemicals have already off-gassed. So moving on, Teflon. You know, people look at Teflon pans and you think, wow, you know, should I cook in them because I'm getting, you know, does the Teflon get in my food? And the answer is yes, it does get in your food from the Teflon pan if the Teflon is flaking off, okay? And to a certain extent, the vapors and stuff that are coming off of the pans are obviously contacting your food and getting in it. But the biggest hazard, really, with using Teflon cookware is that it off-gasses. Especially when it's on high heat. So, you know, when you're cooking in your kitchen, you're breathing in these vapors, and these are extremely toxic. And there's stories that if you have a mission over here is to obviously replace your Teflon lined cookware with either ceramic lined, or use stainless steel, or use glass cookware. Okay, I had to put this caution here. You have to use cast iron cookware only if you're sure that your blood iron levels are not too high. There are a lot of people, when you get a blood test, you know, you mostly hear about people who are anemic and don't have enough iron in their blood, but there are just as many people who have too much iron in their blood, and so using cast iron cookware does add iron to your diet, and so you got to be careful that for that reason. But it's not, I don't see any other hazards with using cast iron cookware. Okay, and then the caution that, of course, the people that make Teflon say is that if you want to use their cookware, you should cook on very low heat and open your windows and install a strong kitchen hood with a fan. So, of course, that's a solution, but I personally think that it's much better to eliminate the source of the hazard instead of trying to control it. I guess you could always wear a respirator while you're cooking, but that would not be too much fun. Okay, so then I've got dry cleaning. All right, and I definitely want to mention that if you bring conventionally dry cleaned clothing into your house and hang it in the closet, you are being exposed to perchloroethylene. And you can even go on the EPA website, epa.gov, and read about perchloroethylene and some of the things that are being done to try and find substitutes and trying to eliminate it. There are a ton of organic dry cleaners popping up all over the place now. And so when I have to have clothes dry cleaned, that's what we do. We take them to an organic dry cleaner. If you use a conventional dry cleaner, my suggestion is to hang the recently cleaned clothing either outdoors or in a very well-ventilated area for a day without the plastic bag over it, and try to, you know, get some of those vapors off of the clothing before you put them in your closet. Okay, but then there's another group of people, and this is very serious. People who live or work in the same building as a conventional dry cleaner, because they're finding that this is permeating through buildings. Buildings are being condemned because they're contaminated with this perchloroethylene. So I hate to make a recommendation to somebody that you have to move, but really this is one situation that I would seriously consider moving. If I was living in or working in a building where there was a conventional dry cleaner, you know, my second choice would be to put in a really, really good ventilation system, and definitely do whatever you can to support your immune system, because it is being just assaulted every day with these vapors. Okay, then we have pesticides, herbicides. This question I put in here because I just want to emphasize how easy it is to stop wearing your shoes in the house. Mm. And I was watching there was a documentary where they did a test of what's on the bottom of our shoes. And they had people take new shoes that test to be clean, and they put them on and just walked down the street to the convenience store, walked around in the convenience store for a little bit, and came back. And they were picking, they tested the shoes, they were picking up all kinds of stuff, hydrocarbons, petroleum, again, herbicides and pesticides from walking on the grass, you know, just all kinds of germs and bacteria and everything, because everything you walk in sticks to your shoes, and then you come in and you walk around your house and it all gets in your house. So this one here is an easy fix. I gave it a 3 because I wasn't really, you know, there's no way to really test what's on your shoes. I think actually that's probably more hazardous than that, but if I can get you to not wear your shoes in the house, I'm happy, whatever I have to do. Okay, then I want to talk about heavy metals, because I had the pleasure of interviewing my dentist, and I've given you the link here, and you can go to this link and listen to the interview that I did with this dentist. But I didn't interview him about being a biological dentist or about dentistry in any way. I interviewed him about how he keeps the air clean in his office. And I was shocked at what I learned at, number one, what he does, and number two, that other dentists are not required to do that. Okay? So in the dentist's office, even if you don't have mercury fillings in your mouth, just walking into the dental office is a serious amount of exposure. You are being overexposed just by standing in there, and you're being overexposed to the point, like, if I was in a chemical plant and I had a worker that tested with the kind of exposures he would have if he walked into a dentist's office, I would have to take him out of that job until I fixed that problem. Okay, and that's what was so shocking to me, that there's no requirements for conventional dentists that I know of anyway, and this dentist that I interviewed, he said he didn't know of any requirements to clean up the building and the air, you know, so that people aren't exposed. So if you live or work in a building where there's a dentist office, okay, you should definitely consider having yourself checked for mercury. If you have a lot of accumulated mercury in your body and you can't attribute it to anything else, like a mouthful of mercury fillings or something, then, you know, this can be a serious source of mercury. Dental workers are, you know, the statistics are really high for the amount of mercury that they are carrying around in their body, even if they don't have mercury fillings. Okay? And then, of course, if your exposure is only when you go to the dentist, then, of course, the answer is to find a biological dentist. And I've given you another link that takes you to a website that helps you to plug in your where you live, and then you can find a biological dentist near you. Okay, I highly recommend that. Okay, and then, of course, we had to ask the question, do you have mercury fillings in your mouth? If the answer is yes, you, of course, have to put on one here because you have them in your mouth every day. And I definitely recommend getting these mercury fillings taken out of your mouth. And then, even more importantly, if you have high mercury levels, really, really, you know, consider finding a really skilled healthcare practitioner that knows how to get mercury removed from your body, because it's not an easy thing to do, and sometimes it's more toxic if you release it than if you leave it in your fat cells and release it slowly. Okay, so we've been talking for quite a while. I've been talking for quite a while. I got you through the air section. The rest of this, there's a water section, there's a food section, there's a personal care product section, and there's a cleaning product section. And each of those sections coming up are smaller than the one that we just went through, and they are easier and more straightforward. So I think this is an excellent spot, Dr. Rita Marie.
I think this was great. You know, and could you scroll down a little bit so we can glance?
We have chlorine, and for chlorine, you know, I've given you some ideas of what you can do, but I also threw in here an excerpt from the Brita homepage itself, which tells you what a Brita filter will remove and what it will not. And, you know, so I recommend the chlorine here. I recommend that you do, you know, if it's too expensive for you to get a water purification system, or if you rent and you just can't, you're not allowed to put one in, then, you know, option three I've given is just get some kind of a filter, and a Brita filter will remove chlorine, but nowhere near effectively as some of the other types of purification systems. I also go into chlorine as far as swimming in a pool. I couldn't talk about water without talking about water fluoridation, so I've given you a link here of where you can go. I think this is the Fluoride Action Network. But you could go to this link and find out if your water is fluoridated. If you live in the U.S., you can go there and you can, you know, just type in, I believe, your zip code, and it'll let you know if your water company does put fluoride in the water. Because they don't have to. Some states, you know, they have to, and most municipal water companies have to. But private water companies don't have to. And I know here in Pennsylvania, I've worked for several water companies, and the main one in Philadelphia does not fluoridate their water. So it is possible you live in an area that doesn't put fluoride in. But it's very important to understand that a Brita filter will not remove fluoride.
Yeah.
So if you're going to remove the fluoride from your water, you have to go with an RO system or a distillation system or something of that sort.
Although this isn't chemical related, have you come across any way to mitigate the electronic and radio frequency pollution that we're all subject to every day.
Yes, I have. And actually, I had that in this checklist, but it didn't fit into any of my categories, so I took it off for now. But I definitely am planning to put a section of electromagnetic frequency type radiation in there. And what I do, I have a special case on my phone. It's called a Pong case, P-O-N-G, like a ping pong ball. And I put that on my phone, and that directs, it has a chip in it that directs the radiation away from your body. Of course, that doesn't help with the amount of radiation that you're exposed to in the room. Like, you know, even if you're just in an office where you all go into a conference room to have a meeting, and you've got, say, 15 people in there, and every one of them have a cell phone, and they're all radiating. And so even if you're protecting yourself with your phone, you're still getting the radiation from everybody else's. We're getting radiation from our computers, from, you know, everybody's got, you know, routers, and you know, and now I did have the pleasure of meeting a woman who runs a sauna detoxification center, and when you go in there, she will not allow cell phones to be on for that reason, and she also won't allow internet, like wireless internet, in her building. Like, she has internet, but it's all wired. She has found that it's some people are so sensitive to it that she won't have it. You know, I did one solution that I'm actually looking into right now for my own home is if your wireless router in your home, if you can buy them that have a switch that you can actually turn the router off at night or when you're not using it. So, like, you know, when we go to sleep at night, our wireless router is still downstairs and it's radiating throughout our house. But if you can turn that switch off, and then turn it back on in the morning when you're ready to use it, that would certainly decrease your exposure for 8 hours. There's also, you can, I can't remember the website now, but there's a place that sells shielding material, like fabric, shielding fabric, and you can like make a canopy for your bed, you can make a blanket out of the shielding fabric, that, you know, at least when you're sleeping, you can be shielded from the radiation. And they even sell clothing that is made from shielding fabric. I don't have any idea whether it's effective or not, but I do know it's out there. And some people who are really sensitive, who can really feel the radiation, are saying that it works. But hopefully that gives you some idea of what I found so far.
Those are great. And Craig had mentioned just getting a timer on your router so that it automatically turns off.
That's a good idea.
Yeah,
there's also a Lloyd. His name is Lloyd Burrell. Lloyd, B-U-R-R-E-L-L, I believe is his name. He has a really good website all about EMF pollution, and has he talks about a lot of things, like things we don't think of, like the amount of radiation you're getting in your car. Like years ago, our cars didn't have a lot of electronics and a lot of sensing devices, but now we've got tire pressure sensors and all kinds of other sensors in the car that are supposed to be, you know, they're designed to, I guess, keep us safe as far as safety on the road. But you're sitting in that car for any length of time, and all this radiation is around you inside of the car. So he has a lot of solutions. His name is Lloyd Burrell.
B-U-R-R-E-L-L?
Yes, B-U-R-R, I think, B-U-R-R-E-L-L. If I look that up and I find that I was wrong, I'll email you, I'm pretty sure that's correct.
Sounds good. Yeah, and the other thing about being in the car is the cell phone. So putting your cell phone on airplane mode when you're in the car, because the rays are bouncing all over the place.
Yeah, I just saw a comment popped up. The website, that's correct. It is. It's electricsense.com.
Okay.
Lloyd's website.
Okay, electricsense.com. Okay, thank you. And then the other thing was dryer sheets. Someone said they didn't see that you put dryer sheets on there. Is that something you're going to add in the future or could add in the future?
I should definitely add that in the future. I actually forgot about those because it's been so long since I used them. But, yes, that was one of the first things I got rid of, because mostly because of the fragrance. But also there's just there's just a ton of chemicals in them, and the problem is that it's kind of considered a cleaning product, and so it's not required to be labeled. So you really, they don't have to tell you what's in them, but they are very unsafe. And I have tried buying the kind, like Seventh Generation makes a dryer sheet, and there's another brand I can't remember, but I bought it in the Whole Foods store. But those, they're not the same. They're not as effective. So I just stopped using dryer sheets altogether, and I just used liquid fabric softener that's made by, you know, one of the responsible companies like Seventh Generation. But I have found that this is a new thing I just learned. But if you could take a rag and put some type of like a couple drops of an essential oil that you like the scent of, you know, that is helpful. And no. Also, so you put it on the rag and you put that in the dryer. And also, I have found that if you take a little bit of your liquid fabric softener and just put it on a rag or a washcloth or something and dry it in the dryer, it has the same effect as a dryer sheet.
I don't know. I've never used a dryer sheet, so I don't even know what they're for.
I instantly sneeze when I get near them now.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You know, it's funny how you get so sensitive to it once you start using it.
Oh, fantastic. This has been awesome, Donna, and I know there's so much more. You've still got another 9 pages of your stuff that you didn't even go through.
Yes. So I'm scrolling through. You see here I also have radon underwater.
Mm.
Radon seeps into your house through their basement, but it also can come in through your water pipes if you have a well. You know, that's another caution, but there's things that can be done. You know, and then I get into a whole bunch of things that are in the things we eat. And then if you scroll down, I have things, personal care products. I tried to hit the big ones, and again, I will be adding so many more things to it. And then cleaning, I really only have 2 things because, again, we don't really know what's in our cleaning products because they're not labeled. But I've given my favorite resource, which I always give, the EWG website, and they now have a cleaning product database that is fairly comprehensive. I have found a lot of things that I thought, oh, this won't be on there, and sure enough, it is. So, you know, definitely take that website and make that. That's my Bible. I love going to that website. I mean, I have a lot of other resources for finding out about these chemicals, but I find that they do a really good job of putting it in terms that everybody can understand in most cases. You know, sometimes I get a lot of questions about what does this mean or what does that mean, but in general, they do a good job. So, you know, that's why I didn't think it was necessary to start at the bottom here because this is much more self-explanatory than going through the air stuff.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's very helpful. You've did enough of them that we get the idea and can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it could be daunting to just open this up and try to use it. So it's really helpful to have that explanation. And I love the whole, you know, the exposure risk thing. I think you convinced me that I need to do something different on my swimming pool because I'm not willing to give up swimming and do some, you know, salt solution or something like that. I just so appreciate you being here and doing this for us. Well, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to hear you. Donna's spoken at 3 of my 4 events so far. The first one, she came just as a participant, and was like, and she answered so many people's questions that I said, I need you to just get up and teach people this stuff next time. So she speaks at all my live events and shares this stuff. So thank you again so much, Donna, for being here. I so appreciate you and your willingness to spend your time. I know how busy you are, and this product is great. It's awesome. I can't wait for it to get into more people's hands. All right. Thank you, Donna. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye now.